caution to the wind. I'm only recording on Zencaster.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Same here.
Right?
So I can have full screen. Let's just do it, mate.
We're bros. Let's just do it. We got this.
Zencast, if you let us down.
I mean, this is what will definitely ruin it, but it hasn't let us down yet. 1, 2, 3, 4.
There we go.
Oh, buddy. That was good. Good times yesterday, by the way. That was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was great times. I did have a seizure halfway through teaching that thing that I was teaching because apparently it's not a good idea to teach something you can't even play yourself. I should have realized that, but you know what? You live and you learn.
So we had a legit conversation afterwards about that. And I think for all teachers listening to this, that's something that we go through as teachers. We figure something out for ourselves as players. And if you're a true educator, as soon as you figure something out, you are just juiced out of your mind to show everybody this thing because you feel like you unlocked a door that no one knew how to get through. You want to show the world how to get through it. The problem is it doesn't always work. As soon as you go to teach it, you realize quickly, which I realized in my first advanced camp this year, you don't have it down.
Yeah.
And so you have to start kind of hedging your bets. And all of a sudden you're saying things like, okay, guys, now obviously I don't have it down yet, but this is where it can go. But the faith is lost. And I'm not saying, I'm talking about what happened in my camp.
Yeah, I know
what you mean. I've been teaching since I was 17. I've done this so many times where all of a sudden the student's like, uh-huh. Well, if it can go there, why aren't you taking it there?
It's
like,
exactly.
Well, because I've literally had 6 minutes with this. It all makes sense in my head. I know that this is the next steps for me. And I just wanted to show it to you. And it's like, I've learned my lesson by being burned over and over and over again by my excitement that you can't do it.
Yeah,
you have to just be like, oh man, that sucks. Okay, this will be good to teach 3 months from now once I've flushed it out, which brings us to the point of, dude, how long does it take to work something out new? I mean, that thing that you did, so you had a sextuplet exercise, mm-hmm. mixing singles and doubles, but how long do you think it'll be until you could stand up on stage at the UK drum show and teach that?
Oh my God, I dread to even think it. Honestly, I have no idea. It's like I'm slowly chipping away at it, but it's just so funny,
right,
mate. Like, it's going to take ages, like everything does on the kit. Mm-hmm. But what's so funny about, like, I can play singles and I can play doubles, right? And I've been playing those my entire life pretty much. But yet, all of a sudden, the other day, I stumbled across a combination which was literally just singles and doubles, but I've never played it in that way before and it completely stopped me in my tracks. It's so funny about drums, mate. You know what I mean? Like, you think you've done it, you think you've like, you've conquered everything and then all of a sudden, you're just like, oh my God, I can't even write down what I'm playing right now and it's so, so simple.
Totally.
But yeah, it's going to take a good few years, but the reason why I taught it yesterday was, well, I wouldn't say even taught it. The reason why I showed it to everyone is because I kind of wanted that. What we've got going on in the Patreon page is amazing, mate. You know what I mean? And I wanted to bring in even more that community and like we're in this together sort of feel. And that's why I was like, look, I don't have this down at all. You can probably play this better than me. But for those who can't play it, we'll do it together.
Yeah. And I thought you absolutely crushed it because that's what our Patreon group is about. It's like, look, we're all on this journey together. We're all struggling at things that are hilariously simple. Like you said, I mean, it wasn't a complex version of singles and doubles, but as soon as you started teaching it, you could see everybody on the Zoom call practicing it because everyone's like, wait, how can I not do this? This is so easy to understand. And I always say that in my videos, like, look, this thing I'm teaching is simple to understand. It's a simple concept. It's really hard to do. And if you told me right now, and the reason why I brought this up is because I want especially the newer drummers that have only been playing for 4 or 5 years to understand how long it takes to get something down where you can actually do it, like really use it. If I worked on that same thing, to do it in a 45 second clip where I get to film it 1,000 times for Instagram, I could probably do that in 2 days maybe. To do it to the point that I'm on stage in front of other professional drummers and I'm teaching it and I'm talking about all of the possibilities, that's probably a 1 year thing for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to really commit some time to it to be like, okay, I got to flush this thing out. I got to play it. I mean, tempos, that's nothing. I can go fast. It's like, I got to play it with music in the background and make sure the vocalist isn't throwing me off. I got to play it with a click, without a click. I got to play it over different ostinatos. It's such a process to get one little idea down to the point that you can actually bring it into your daily vocabulary.
Yeah, yeah. So we spoke about it on the last podcast as well, like especially bringing it into a musical situation live. Like like I said, the six fret roll, mate, I was practicing it all day long in my little studio, and then to actually play it comfortably live in a band situation took me ages, mate. Far longer than I ever thought it would. But yeah, that's why I love this.
Let me ask you this.
Go on.
Let me ask you this. If we consider the exercise that you taught to be, and by the way, if you guys want to know the exercise that we're teasing about, you can join Patreon, where it is in the little chat area and you can see it all written out in beautiful GrooveScribe form for you. So just head on over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie, support this podcast, which helps us out a ton. And then you can be a part of all this. But let's assume let's consider that to be a vocabulary word, because your goal is to speak naturally. Mm-hmm. Can you remember the last vocabulary word in English that you learned and now you use it frequently on a daily basis?
Nah, I can't.
Yeah. How hard is it to learn something new? You know what mine is? Chicane, because I'm watching Formula One. You know how many times I've seen a chicane while driving? None.
What is a chicane?
It's like I don't even know. I think it's like an S turn, like a double turn.
Right.
But I just know that when things get really windy on the track, they go, Lewis Hamilton enters the chicane. And I'm all about it. I'm all about it, dude. Oh, and I'm like, what a great word. I want to name my next dog Chicane.
That's a good dog name.
Yeah, come here, Chicane. But that's the most recent word that I've learned, and I want to use it, and I haven't found an opportunity to use it. And I feel like ideas on the drums are very similar. It's like, oh, so cool, I got to learn that. And then you think, like, so when are you going to use it? Never.
Exactly.
And so that's our conundrum as players and as artists, is like, well, I want to build my skills. But I also, now I'm getting to a point, you know, if you're kind of in that intermediate world where you've been playing for 10 years or so, or legitimately practicing for that long, you want to build your skills, but you don't want to waste your time learning things that you'll never use. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm going to go on a very specific drive on my way down to LA. I'm going to take this thing called The One, which is the coast, where you're just driving on the ocean the whole way from Northern California to Southern California. I'm taking that because I'm hoping at some point the Windies will present a chicane for me. And I will voice note you the moment it happens. And I'll be like, Eddie, I'm on a chicane. I just went through a chicane.
I should probably look
that word up, because I'm pretty sure I'm not using it properly.
Mate, I love it as well. You've probably been through a million of them. You didn't even realize. Anyway, you're probably going to do it and go, wait, that was a chicane.
It sounds so much better on TV. My problem.
Okay, right. But before we move on with the podcast, sir, I've got a little game.
Bring it.
I've got a little game.
What?
Yeah, big time. And it's a game. You know, we're mates, right? We're mates.
We are. I would say we're damn near. We're neighbors to being brothers.
Okay, right. Well, let's see how well you know me then, mate. There is a mixture of very obvious ones, and then like a mixture of just like funny ones, music related ones, and then some others. But
all right, bring it.
Okay, cool. This is
so this is the Rona and Amber game.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
they say
we don't know each other.
This is what would Eddie rather have or do? Right. So some are music related, some aren't. Would I rather purchase a Rolex Submariner date or no date? Mm.
No date.
Yeah. 100% correct. There we go.
Attaboy. Hey. All right, let's end the game right now. 100%. I know you.
No, but mate, to be honest, we're going to be typical blokes in this. Like, we're best mates. But like, as soon as you start playing me this game, I'm going to be like, I have no idea. Right. Here we go. Anyway. A pair of new high hats. Okay. Mm. Or a pair of new sneakers.
Oh. New sneakers all day long. Not to mention, you have two pairs of hi-hats, you have 6,000 pairs of shoes, and you'd still be like, well, I don't have those.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Plus as well, I love those hats I've got. Do you know what I mean? I'm like you. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You've got your lifer hats. Yep. Yeah, and I would be the one convincing you, like, dude, you need a set of 13s. At some point, it's going to happen. You're like, nope, I need new shoes.
No, I need a new pair. All right, sweet. Yep. Would I rather copy someone or be copied?
Oof. Okay, now. You would much rather be copied, yet when you are copied, similar to me, it drives you up the effing wall. Yeah. And I have to deal with it. So I'd rather you copy somebody else because I'd never have to hear about it. But when somebody copies you, that's 200 voice notes.
Yeah, that is 200 voice notes just going. And it starts from, right, I'm out. See you later. I can't be asked for this anymore. To then being like, it's a positive thing. I knew my idea was good. So yeah, they can have it. Anyway, on to the next one. Yeah. Okay.
It's the biggest form of flattery and all. We go through all that. We go through all the phases. We go through denial. We go through recognition. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're right.
I feel like I'm kind of on point.
You are on point, mate. You've got all of them right so far. Okay. Would I rather read music or listen to a track once?
Dude, you'd rather listen to the intro of a song than have me present you with the entire sheet music for the whole thing. You'd be like, I'll figure it out. Just let me listen to the first four bars. Correct. Everything will be fine.
Correct. Correct. Okay. Right. Would I rather good Wi-Fi or a professional recording studio?
Oh, bro. You would take good Wi-Fi over healthy food, over clean water.
100%.
The Wi-Fi issue. 100%. You would be like, huh, so that water's going to give me the runs for 6 weeks, but that room has killer Wi-Fi. I'll drink the water from that room with killer Wi-Fi.
Yeah, 100%.
Bring it on.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if anyone out there has, what's it called? Skylink?
Yeah. Starlink.
Yeah, Starlink. If anyone has that and has, you know, thinks it's good, please let me know because I'm thinking about getting one. Anyway. Would I rather drink? This is a bit of a trick question because I don't know.
Okay.
Would I rather drink tea or coffee?
Oh, that's a tough one because you are British. You are not against tea. You want to drink tea, but you can't get off the coffee. So you would rather drink tea and be all healthy and zen-like. But you won't. And so if I wasn't around to influence you and you were presented with a cup of hot green tea or a cup of your favorite coffee, you would knock the tea over and just start cussing and be like, get that trash out of my face. So I would say you're open-minded to tea because you're just British and you don't have a choice, but you do love yourself some coffee. You and Stan Bicknell would have a lot more fun together than you and me.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be like, more green water.
It's weird though at the minute. Like I said in last week's episode, I'm definitely not, I want to get off as much coffee as I'm on at the minute. It's like, I feel like tea is like a more supportive friend. Coffee's like the bit of the wild mate. Do you know what I mean? Who like is a good laugh.
That's exactly what it is.
But you just, after you hang out with him, you're like, oh my God, I feel awful. Why did I do that?
No, again? So here's the easiest way to think of it. Coffee is, who's your Irish UFC fighter that you love?
Oh, Conor McGregor. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So coffee is Conor McGregor. Matcha is Conor McGregor's manager.
Yeah.
A little more business savvy, a little more sense, keeps him out of the bars at night.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you're still part of the entourage. You're still getting, you're on the jets. Everything's good, but it's a little more sensible. Where coffee is just hanging out with Connor and getting in some serious trouble.
Yeah, mate, big time. Because once you've hung out with him once, it's two, three times, four times, and then
You have to keep getting the first Connor hang back, and the only way to do that is to get in a bar fight in Budapest with Connor. Like then it's like, well, we got to raise the level again, and we got to go again and again.
It's true, but yeah. I would definitely take coffee over tea at this point, but I want to learn more about tea for sure.
Hey, I got a week with you at my house.
Yeah,
I'm gonna change your mind.
Okay, all right, sweet. Would I rather chat to my idols or get a photo with them?
Oh, bro, it's not even close. Like you'd actually tell somebody else, like, hey, can you put the camera away? Like you want the chat. Now we've talked about it though. If there was a picture of you chatting to your idols and it's casual. And they look more engaged than you are in them, but they're just really in depth. Like, man, Eddie's dropping knowledge bombs. And, you know, Travis and Chloe are on the edge of their seat trying to learn everything they can about you. Then nothing wrong with. And okay, here's what I would say. You can chat with Travis. I'm going to make you choose.
Okay.
Good half hour chat with Travis. Just you and Travis Barker hanging out, talking, shooting the breeze. Or Travis posts the picture of him hanging out with you on his social media, like, got to hang out with Eddie Thrower today.
Oh, mate. I think
that's life changing.
Yeah, that is
changer.
That is life changing. Whoa. That is a trick question.
If you're showing him some shoes and Travis is freaking out about the shoes, it's the drum world, your shoe world all coming together, and he posts the picture, like, got some new kicks from Eddie and the guys at Paragon.
I'm gonna go with that one. I think I have to, mate. Mm-hmm. Do you know? I'd have to do that.
You got to think of your son's future.
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, exactly, mate. Exactly. Okay, right. This was a bit weird, to be honest. Would I rather eat a vegan sausage or a meat sausage?
Bro, our voice notes.
You remember? I love it. You remember? Fuck
yeah. Of course. I just dropped an F-bomb. I'll have to remember to cut that out. Of course I remember. My man would my non-vegan brother, Eddie, would much rather eat a vegan sausage than a regular sausage. 100%. And I am in the same boat. I sent him a voice note saying, hey, man, when you get here, wake up when you wake up. Everything's going to be cool. Come on down, get on the couch, and there will be some fried eggs and some vegan sausage waiting for you. And I'm in the same boat. Like, I wouldn't say I'm a big meat eater, but I'm definitely not vegetarian. But there's something about sausage that just kind of weirds me out.
Yeah, it's the gristly bits. Oh, when you get a gristly bit, it's enough to like make you throw up there and then.
It just, me and chicken sausage, we get along okay. Mm-hmm. But I struggle to eat anything that has four legs. I know that you should just be either vegetarian or you're not, or vegan or you're not.
Yeah.
But I mean, we have the Folsom pig here. Like, when you're here, you'll probably meet the pig, but there's a guy that just walks his pig around town. And it's like, I can't get on board with it anymore.
It's
weird, mate. You know, it's a tough one. It's too close to dogs.
Yeah, it's the same as me, mate. Like, today, this is a bit of a turn of conversation, but today I was making just a chicken sandwich, right? Chicken and avocado with a bit of hot sauce and mayonnaise, as you do.
Atta boy.
And I bit into it and I was just like, oh, I don't know why I'm feeling a bit weird about this today. It's weird, mate. My relationship with meat goes in and out, in and out. I think for me, ignorance is bliss, which is not the best way to live. But like, when I don't think about it, it's cool. But when I think about it, I'm like, am I a little bit weirded out by this? But anyway, yeah, you're right. A vegan sausage over a normal one any day.
Every
mate.
Day.
Every day. All right. Drum with Mike and Eddie, mate. I love it. film or a documentary?
Oh, for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, this is the first one that's a little iffy, but I'm going to say, just from all of our chats, documentary.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I struggle to watch films, mate. I struggle to invest an hour and a half into something that I don't know is going to be good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I could see that. But yeah, documentary can be on the most mundane subject ever. And yet by the end, you think like, I just didn't know the world of unicycles was that deep.
Yeah, I did not
and
know.
And I got to really get in. Yeah, to Bobby Schmeckenmeyer. He's the greatest athlete of all time.
Schmeckenmeyer.
Robert Schmeckenmeyer.
Robert Schmeckenmeyer definitely wears head to toe lycra. Do you know what I mean?
100%. Absolutely. And I, you know what? When he does it, I support it. It's like, you're a professional unicyclist. Robert, get after it, son.
Oh, okay. Last one, right? And this is a bit of a tough one, I guess. Well, I don't know. It might not
come
be.
On.
I love me a bit of money, mate. But money or... This is music, right? Money or musical integrity?
Ooh, that is a tough one. You are the high maintenance wife that I don't have. when I think about my wife, Amber, I mean, she literally just... how unhigh maintenance she is shocking.
Okay.
But you love yourself... the good stuff. You like good clothes. You like good watches. You're trying to get a hold of Elon Musk for his Wi-Fi because it'll cost more.
Yeah.
But at the same time, man, you take music way more serious than most people understand. So I'm going to go musical integrity.
Yeah.
And you'll be dirt poor.
Big time. And I'll make my money elsewhere. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Cool.
Yep.
That's the end of the game. I wish we had a little theme tune, sort of clap, cheer thing.
Do we not? Dang it. Ah, biscuits.
Is there one on
there?
You
know what? No, but I got a new clinic track.
Yes, feeling it.
All right, there we go. Is that there what we got a little preview of the UK drum show?
Oh, is that UK? Is that not the one we're doing together?
That is not.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
We're gonna play that. I'm gonna take the drums out of the Mike and Eddie intro, and we're gonna do that at our clinic.
Oh, okay. Sick. All right.
We should totally do that.
We should do that. Yeah. We should.
The only problem is I don't know what the hell that song's called. I downloaded it, you know, 2 years ago when we started this thing. Mate, I don't know how I'm gonna find it, but I'll figure it out.
There was someone who tagged us on Instagram who played that. I swear. They did a cover to that.
There's a guy who made a whole YouTube video of it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we just you know, reach out, mate. And then we're...
Let me know what our intro is called, please. Because I just grabbed it thinking like, all right, this will get us through the first few episodes. And then we'll have one of our listeners write us an intro. By the way, if any of you listeners out there are much more musically inclined than Eddie or myself, and you feel like I've got a good intro and outro for this podcast, we're 59 episodes deep. We're ready for an intro outro change.
Oh, mate. Yeah. You know? I'm dying for an outro because we haven't got one. A little fade in.
Well, we just use the intro.
It's like if I'm talking too much. Intro. Yeah, exactly. If I'm talking too much and I just hear the music come on, it's like the Grammys, isn't it? You know, when they're just going on and thanking every Tom, Dick and Harry, the music comes on and they just carry on talking. It's and we're going to the ad break, even if you're still talking. Yeah.
Yeah. That's well, I hope you guys will help us out with that. All right, let's get into today's episode.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I did want to talk about, so, you know, I just mentioned the clinic we're doing. I did want to talk about, so everyone knows what's going on with the kit, right? With your kit.
I think most people know that I'm giving away my 1965 Gretsch Round Badge Blue Sparkle kit.
Okay, and baby. I think we touched on it before, but not a lot. Why are you doing it? Why are you giving it? Isn't it your sound? Isn't it like your thing?
It is. Yeah. And so time to move on. That's simple as that. No. It definitely wasn't a decision that was even on the table. So here's what's going on with that. That kit, let me just take you guys all the way back to the beginning. A long time ago, I started looking for a 60s Gretsch round badge. Now, in the mid to late 60s, Gretsch started having their shells produced by the Jasper Furniture Company. So anything from the mid to late 60s, depending on the year, all the way into, I would say, I think maybe like the late 70s, early 80s, was all those shells were made for Gretsch by the Jasper Furniture Company. So in the Gretsch world, people will always ask if it's an older kit, are those Jasper shells? That's kind of the legendary. That's the time where Gretsch just hit its stride and became really that great Gretsch sound. So these were still drum shells made for Gretsch specifically. They were just made at the Jasper Furniture Company factory. So they're called Jasper shells. So I always wanted to track one of those down and have it here for the students to play against my modern USA Customs, which are the same kits. It's a six-ply shell. And if people don't know, the Gretsch USA Custom recipe is a six-ply shell, maple on the outside, maple on the inside, and then gum wood on the middle plies. So you have one ply of maple, four plies of gum, and one ply of maple. And that's the six-ply kind of Gretsch recipe. So I wanted to show people like, hey, they're the same. Gretsch still makes them that way. They just make them at their own factory in South Carolina like they've done for a very long time. So that's how I got that kit. And I was looking for a very specific finish called, it's called Starlight Sparkle. Juno's about to bark at this guy because he's got a beard. Nice, Juno. Proud of you, kid. She was staring his ass down. So I was looking for this Starlight Sparkle kit. Couldn't find one. And then found one in blue sparkle. And I was like, you know what? I'm just getting it so the campers can try it out versus a modern Gretsch kit. So send it out. So I bought it, paid, you know, full price, my own money. I can't have Gretsch. They're not going to buy me a vintage kit. So paid for it, got it here. And as soon as I put it on the stage, I'd never had a kit with color in it. All my kits are natural finishes, natural wood, dark woods, light woods. And it just popped like crazy. And I kind of fell in love with it. Mostly the looks. Now, what the problem you have with a 1960s kit or 70s kit or whatever isn't really the drums. It's the hardware. I don't know if you've ever seen the bass drum spurs that come out of a 1960s kit, but they're two toothpicks. They're metal toothpicks. And they're like, good luck. And they're round at the end. Good luck. This will stay in place. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I've seen them.
One kick and that thing's like 96 yards ahead of you.
I know. I don't know how people did it back in the day, mate. When I went to Rusty's drum shop that time, I walked around and I was like, they're all so beautiful, mate. But I'd have to use these as like tables. Do you know what I mean? And like,
totally.
I can't play these.
The hardware is like, it's an issue. And like, as I'm playing the kit sometimes, well, this hasn't happened to me, but I'm kind of scared. Like, I'm always shocked when I go to the floor tom and I undo the legs because I'm going to swap heads, how barely on those legs actually were. Like the wing nuts, they're tiny. They don't have a lot of like torque to them. So anyways, I wasn't planning on this being my kit. It just kind of became my kit because the looks. Now, I will say this. It's one of the best sounding drum sets I've ever played in my life. So I didn't lose anything sound-wise from a brand new USA Custom, but I gained this beautiful finish. And all of a sudden, my studio started to feel like, okay, this is my thing. Mm. I'm Blue Sparkle guy. I'm a four-piece kit. I've had this kit for like 3.5-4 years now. So I was still finding my voice. And this became my thing. Well, while that's happening in a separate room that's not ever filmed, I have a Gretsch Broadcaster. So a Gretsch Broadcaster is made in the same factory. It's a US kit, but it's a 3-ply shell with rounded bearing edges. So 3-ply is what happened in like from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and into the 60s. That was before they went to a 6-ply shell. So the most vintage thing you can have, basically, mm-hmm. the warmest thing you could have would be a 3-ply shell with rounded bearing edges.
Right.
I love that sound for bass drums and for toms. Well, my broadcaster, I have that, and it's a natural wood finish. And it's just the kit that I gravitate towards when I'm playing by myself. And so I was kind of noticing that. And to be totally honest, there is a little bit of an artist guilt. And I don't know if you have experienced this with your snare, your vintage snare. And I'm not making fun of you for calling it vintage. I've been corrected. You have a vintage snare. But I don't know if you've experienced this at all. If you only played that snare, you might experience this, which is, I don't want people thinking that I'm not proud of modern day Gretsch. Like if they say, so wait, you're a Gretsch artist, but you don't play anything that they make right now besides your signature snare. Mm. And it's like, well, no, I just, to be totally honest, everything I do, when you hear me play drums, you see me play drums. So everything you see is with the kit that I think looks best on camera, which is my Blue Sparkle kit.
Yeah.
If it was sound only, if I was going to a studio and there were no cameras, I would take my broadcaster. Right. It's my favorite sounding drum set. So basically, through all this, I reached out to Gretsch and I said, look, here's the deal. I don't need another kit. I have a broadcaster in these sizes. I have my 65 Gretsch round badge in my favorite color. I'm happy to pay for it if you need to, but can you just make me a broadcaster in my favorite finish? Or should I send you my broadcaster and have you wrap it? What should we do? But I want my favorite sound with my favorite look. And so that's how the process started. And that's how we got into everything. And while we were doing that, they were like, by the way, we do have Blue Sparkle, but we also have a deeper look, which is called Blue Glass Glitter. And I was like, oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that sounds tasty.
So we went with that. And then I got to say, well, I want the broadcaster, like a 1930s, 40s set of toms and kick, but I want it with thick bass drum spurs. I want it with thick floor tom legs and brackets. I want die cast hoops. I want all the modern things that make playing a drum set less frustrating.
Yeah.
Just with the shells from the 1930s and 40s and 50s. So that's how that all came to be. So basically, to wrap this whole thing up, Blue Sparkle is my favorite finish on the planet for a drum set, for what I'm doing right now and for the stage I have and the cameras and the way that my clothes are. I like that look. My favorite sound is a Gretsch Broadcaster, which is a 3-ply shell versus a 6-ply shell. So while we were doing this whole thing, and I was like, okay, I'll drive down to Oxnard, which is where Gretsch's offices are, not where the shells are made, but I'll drive down to Oxnard and pick it up. And we were talking, and then they just said, so are you going to have two Blue Sparkle kits, a 60s and a modern? And I was like, no. I mean, I don't have anywhere to put it. And then I just thought, I think I'm going to give it away. And the reason why I want to give it away is it needs to be played. Mm. That is the biggest reason. I could obviously just sell it, but there's just something, this kit's almost like too special to sell, if that makes any sense. That may sound stupid.
No, it doesn't. I get you 100%. So basically,
I'm sure you have like a pair of shoes that are like almost impossible to put a value on, but you're like, they're so special, I need to do something special with them. I can't just sell them on eBay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that special thing to me is just putting them put them in a cupboard and look at them. It's just like, all my shoes now, I'm so emotionally attached, mate. It's beyond a joke. It's so weird, mate. Honestly, sometimes I go in, open the cupboard, and I just get them out and have a look at them. I go, sweet, and I just put them back. I'm such a loser, mate. It's unreal. So basically, moving forward from here on out, do not expect me to give any sneakers away at any clinic, guys, if you're listening. Not going to be giving away a single thing, mate. So but basically, this kit is your dream kit. It's piecing together parts of two of your favorite kits and putting them together. So is it a one-of-a-kind kit?
I would say no. This is something that anyone could order. I mean, you know, Gretsch has, when you're dealing with any US kit, so in Gretsch's world, that is Broadcaster, USA Custom, and Brooklyn. Those are the three kits that are made at the US factory. You have quite a bit of options, you know, especially in Broadcaster and USA Custom. So I was able to say, let's just take the Toms, for instance. I got a 3-ply shell. I have my favorite wrap on that shell. Then I have no mount on the drum at all because I'm going to put it in a snare stand.
Yeah.
Then I did add the tone control knobs top and bottom, the mufflers top and bottom. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason that any drum in the world should not have those, when you can always just have them off.
Yeah, I know.
But you can't take a drum without them and turn them on because they're not effing there. So I don't know why I'm yelling. but yeah, so it was like, I got the tone control knobs top and bottom, and then die cast hoops, which I think the Broadcaster comes with non die cast hoops. I can't remember. So I just kind of put together my dream kit, and I also made a big enough fuss about it at Gretsch that they could easily come back to me 3 years from now if I try to place any kind of order. And they could say, no, remember when you told us this was the last kit we'd ever build for you? And I was like, what? But now it's Red Sparkle.
So I'm
really excited, man. I'm really excited. It's going to be a really cool thing. So anyways, as far as the giveaway, I do want to mention this because we mentioned it on the podcast. We're giving it away at the clinic at Bentley's Drum Shop that is happening next month. If you want to go to that clinic, you need to get a hold of Bentley's Drum Shop ASAP. People are reserving seats for this thing because I think it only holds maybe 75 to 100 people because of COVID regulations, even though it's a massive room. And it's going to be me and Eddie. It's going to be sold out. So please get a hold of Bentley's Drum Shop. But for anyone that has emailed me, and I've received a ton of emails and DMs like, hey, I'll take the kit. I totally appreciate it. Absolutely.
Not the way to go, people.
It's been tough.
Not the way to go. I'm going to put it out there. It is not the way to go. I can compare it to the sneaker game, right? Like I always do, because obviously a lot of stores, right? Certain stores, whether you are in the A, B, C list or whatever they are, you know, they get allocated these limited releases, and it always happens. Every store, especially like the smaller skater stores who are run by just like skaters, they'll always put out, look, we're doing a raffle. Do not DM. If you DM us and ask for these shoes and give us whatever reason why you need them and how bad your life's been over the last God knows how long, you are banned. You are blocked. That is not the way to go. They are ruthless. So I'm not saying, you know, block people, Mike. I'm just saying to the people out there, look, if you really want it, just do y'all thing. And yeah, you know what I mean?
Everything's going to be good. Yeah. And I'm not banning anybody. I'm not blocking anybody. I totally appreciate that you guys want this kit. That's awesome that you even want it for what it means, not just because it would be a free kit, but it was decided a long time ago what's happening with this kit. And Eddie and I had made that decision of like, okay, this is what's going down. This is how it's going to happen. But I can tell you this, if you're at that clinic, and if you're not, we're going to film a lot of stuff. But if you're at that clinic, you're going to experience something extremely special. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we have that all worked out. But thank you guys, especially listeners and Eddie yourself. Thanks for giving me the chance to explain that whole thing, because I think a lot of times people think like, dude, you have a Gretsch, or like Eddie, you have a Tama. Why do you need another kit? And it doesn't quite work like that. I can tell you this, and I don't know if you have a similar thing in Tama's world, but the Broadcaster, because there's something with the 3-ply shells, but it's not the sound. All my drums sound great. It's the feeling. When I play that kit, they give me something. Like there's a beautiful warmth that goes through my arm every time I hit that 12-inch tom. And when I hit the floor, it like goes through my chest. And there's a feeling that that kit gives me that no other kit gives me. And I just want to have that, but in my favorite finish that I'm used to. And keep in mind, too, the finish doesn't matter at all for 90% of drummers in the world, other than it's like, well, as long as it's not ugly, it's fine. Everything I do is on camera. The finish is actually extremely important. It's not just me playing in a basement. It's me filming everything and having, there's like a brand identity to that kit. So yeah, so I think it'll be really cool. From that date forward, no one ever has to wonder, hey, are you playing your old kit or your new kit? Because it's like, well, I don't have the old kit. It is gone.
Yeah.
All right.
Mate, I was going to say real quick, talking about that clinic even more, what songs do you want me to, what song would you like to see me play? I'm struggling here. Oof. I don't know what to play. I really don't know.
Really?
Because I've got a few that I can pick from, but then, it's just, I want to know what people want to see me play, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to let some people behind the curtain, we can talk about like how we're starting to plan this clinic out. You know, basically with a clinic, you don't want to go too long because you think you're giving the audience more. All that's happening is their butts are starting to get sore from sitting in a seat for 90 minutes. So we want the clinic portion, the actual teaching, to be around 40 minutes total. That gives you like a 10-minute intro to come on stage, play something, welcome the crowd in. Then Eddie has a 20-minute clinic. I have a 20-minute clinic. Then there has to be some sort of like peak or climax to the clinic itself. And that usually happens right after a Q&A. So at some point, you and I will play again together. And then we have a Q&A with the crowd. And then another final climax that's like, okay, this thing is over. All of that has to take place in about 70 minutes total, if not a little bit less. So, you know, if you think about clinic stuff, my thought is always this: whatever song I play, it has to be relative to what I'm about to teach, other unless it's a walk-up tune. So a walk-up tune for a clinic is I just need to get on a drum set and calm myself down for 4 minutes, and that's what the song is going to give me before I grab a microphone and then, you know, just struggle to speak in front of the crowd. So a lot of times it's like, all right, here's my walk-up tune. It's enough to let the crowd know, by the way, I can play this instrument. You're in good hands. We're going to have a great time. But it doesn't have to be related to anything. If it's part of my clinic, then whatever I'm playing, I usually try to find something where I can say, so in that song, you guys heard a lot of odd time. And so today we're going to be just discussing how to get familiar and comfortable in odd time. And that way, the musical examples are related to the clinic itself and it all ties together rather than just, I just played Barbie Girl by Aqua, and now we're going to talk about metric modulation.
Okay, that's already helped me because now I know what to play, because I want to talk about, you know, rudiments. And there's two songs in particular that have a lot of rudiments within them. So there we go. Boom.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. Like if you did a song that was just straight pocket the entire time, that's giving the crowd the perception, okay, well, I'm at a clinic where people usually show off and he just played 4 minutes of a straight, you know, Steve Jordan, Chad Smith groove. And then you come out and say, all right, guys, let's talk about you rudiments and how to use them on the kit. It's like, oh, I thought we were going to talk about groove because you just locked it down for 4 minutes. So you kind of want the crowd to be having moments where they're saying, oh, I hope he explains that. Oh, yeah, I hope he explains that. No, point. I hope he explains that.
You are good at this, mate. And then you go, you are good at this, aren't you? You are a bloody professional. It's so true,
I went to a lot of clinics too as a kid.
Did
so
you?
I was always like, oh, I hope he explains that. And then he or she wouldn't. And I was like, what the hell? Why'd you do it?
See, I never went to a single one. Like there was not many around here. I think the first one that I went to was, I can't remember his name. But yeah.
That's been good.
Exactly. It wasn't. I'll say it now. It was not good. But that's why the first clinic I ever did was like even more scary, because the guy before me, he was like, yeah, I'm just playing. And I was like, what, you're not talking? Oh, okay. And then the guy after me was like, yeah, I'm majority teaching. And I was like, oh shit, just someone tell me what to do. So do you know what I mean? Just someone tell me what to do and I'll go and do it. But all right, mate, that makes me feel a little bit better. I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah, I think that'll be like, because that way when let's say that I introduce you and say, all right, and now for my dear friend, Mr. Eddie Thrower, you come up on stage. If you grab the mic and start kind of double swallowing and everything, it's like, oh, we're not in safe hands. So if at that moment I say, Eddie Thrower, and it goes, doo-doo, scoo-ga-doo-goo. It's like, oh, we're on a ride now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of how I see it. It's like, we're basically doing a live play, right? I mean, it's a live movie in front of everyone. It's like, we are here to entertain you for the next hour. And through that hour, we need to make sure that you are not defeated. But if anything, you just want to go home and practice.
Exactly.
Like, you're just itching to get out of your seat and go practice. And so it just has to have all the peaks and valleys of a thriller. You know, it's gonna be a lot of fun. So yeah, I think that your song should tie into your clinic. And the great thing is, once you go back with that mindset and play that song, that will dictate your entire clinic, because you're like, okay, that moment, that's going to now be a teaching moment. That moment in the chorus, that's now going to be something I break down.
Yeah.
And then maybe in logic or whatever, you cut those little parts up so that you say, okay, guys, so let's listen to that thing I did in the second verse. You don't have to search for the second verse. You already have it sitting on logic, ready to go.
Oh, beautiful. You should be a drumming consultant as well. Do you know that?
That's what I'll do for a living. I'll just go to dinner with people like the night before the UK drum show and before NAMM and be like, okay, so you have your big performance tomorrow and you've never done this. I'm going to need $1,000 to help you through this.
Right, I will need 99% of your fee. But what I can promise is that after this one, you will get so many bookings that will be worth it. Do you know what I mean?
You'll be set. You'll be good to go. Yeah. I mean, that's what we want to do, is make the crowd excited and be excited about drumming. But at the same time, I think it's really important that we let them into the reality of the situation, which is, there is nothing wrong with telling the crowd, hey, I'm pretty nervous right now. It's like, okay, it disarms the crowd, because they're like, well, we're kind of nervous too. Like, we don't know if you're going to call on us.
Yeah, exactly.
Call us up. Yeah. Oh, speaking of calling up, yesterday.
Oh, mate, yes. So listeners, we on the Patreon call, Mike got us to do something, right? And it was to groove in 7 and then improvise in 7 on the pad. Play whilst saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, and keeping it going. And it's really hard to do. I'm sure a lot of you are probably tapping away on the steering wheel right now trying to do it. It's even harder to do that in front of God knows how many people live on Zoom and with me and Mike watching. So when you got people to do it, I'm not going to lie, I debated on closing my laptop or just like pulling the wireless cable from the router just to pretend like something glitchy went down so I didn't have to do it. But mate, they smashed it. They did a really good job.
Absolutely crushed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was grooving in 7 while counting to 7 for 2 bars while... then 2 bars of totally improvising, like playing a 2-bar fill, but while still counting to 7 out loud. And then I just picked people at random. I looked at the little squares that were on the page and thought, he looks confident. Grab that guy. And like, that was it. It wasn't like anything that I had any knowledge of, like, that person will do well at this. And they smashed it. It was amazing to watch that take place. And I got to say, like, there's a decent chance that most listeners of this podcast are far superior to the drum set than you are.
Yeah, I know, mate. I mean, that's why, like, I was hoping, if anything, you would call me first so I could do it and just be like, sweet. And then, you know, but knowing that like 3 other guys just went before me and they absolutely smashed it, that everyone's heart rate at that point was like, I don't want to be the guy who's
going to Don't call me. Yeah, totally. Yeah, as it got deeper and deeper, it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's why on the third one, I called out my buddy Tom, who was just here at camp, just because he's a legit player. And it's like, okay, you're third. I can't have 2 people do well and then the last guy doesn't do well. And then we go, okay, well, thanks for joining us on this Zoom call. I need all of you to check in on Billy tomorrow. Not Billy that was on the call, Billy Meridian. Love you, buddy. Billy actually went first and he killed it.
Yeah, he killed
it. But, you know, I mean, it could mess with people's psyche. So you have to be careful with that stuff. But if you guys want to be part of something truly special, once again, join the Patreon group. All right, we have to get into our listener questions. By the way, everyone, if you didn't read the title of Catch Up or whatever I decided to title this thing, this was just a chance for me and Eddie to get caught up with you guys, talk about what's going on with the Gretsch kit, and fill you in on a little whether or not I actually know Eddie or not. And clearly, I do. Amber.
You do.
All right, let's get that.
You smashed it, mate. Please do me next time so I can prove that I'm just as good of a friend to you as you are to me.
But you're a good listener.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people say I'm not. Yeah. People say I'm a terrible listener, to be honest. Anyway, let's go.
I think you're a great listener. All right, let's get into our patron questions. So one of the other perks of being part of our Patreon support group is the fact that you get to send in audio questions. And then Juno just stepped on a printer.
It's Juno's.
It's almost her bone time.
Yeah, it's bone time. It's bone time, isn't it? Yeah. Even I know it's bone time now.
Bone 30. Yeah. Bone 30 sounds like something that a terrible boyfriend would tell his terrible girlfriend.
Hey, babe.
Get home, it's bone 30. All right. Moving on. Keep it clean. Classy podcast. Talking about classy, let's get to a question from Mr. Adam Stanley.
Hey, Mike and Eddie. It's Adam from Watford here. Hope you're well. My question this week is kind of weird. What's your favorite sort of weird thing you enjoy in drumming or music? I'll call it my drumming perversion. It's not as weird as it sounds, really. My thing is I kind of like playing on rubbishy school drum sets, and I was wondering if you guys have a similar thing. Because I teach in schools 4 days a week, and the drum sets there are usually junk, and they have like undampened kick drums, and everything's kind of falling apart, and the cymbals are budgety and whatever. But I quite enjoy just sitting down and working with whatever's in front of me. I have to sit differently. The whole thing, it exposes your strengths and your weaknesses. It gives you new ideas. Even the tuning, you know, if it's super high, maybe I'll be like, oh, I'll play jazz on this kit because my home kit is tuned for rock and, you know, all that kind of thing. On the same note, what I quite enjoy sometimes is when you're just suddenly forced to sit down behind somebody's drum kit. This is usually in a spontaneous setting, and you have to just deal. It's like, well, I can't have my stuff where I want it. That cymbal sounds weird to me. It's a tiny crash or whatever. So that's fine. I'm going to deal with it. And I actually end up playing quite well in those situations because I've removed the importance from it. So I guess it's more of an explaining myself thing, but I was wondering if you guys have anything similar that you could talk about, because it's always fun to hear what other drummers think and what kind of weird things people are into that you know, might not be obvious. In answer to your previous statements as well, yeah, I'm a South African expat. I've been living in England for 15 years, married to an English woman, and have had lots of telephone jobs, so my accent is a bit of a hodgepodge. So there you go. Thanks for listening.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Adam, I feel the same as you, basically, buddy. I think that probably my favorite thing to do is to play a kit that is completely opposite of my own kit. I mean, I'm not favorite like I chase it, but I definitely don't mind it when I get somewhere and the kit is just janky and falling apart and I can't move anything because it's someone else's kit. I don't mind that stuff at all. I actually really, really enjoy it. And like you said, Adam, it brings a lot of new stuff out of my playing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. A couple of months ago, I went up to Zildjian to like pick up some new cymbals and they had a kit set up there and it was tuned so different. And it was exactly like you said, Adam. It's like you sit down and you just get, like you said, so many new ideas come to you because you're hearing sounds that you never normally hear. And it makes you think, oh, when I get home, I'm going to do that to my kit. You never do. But yeah, I agree. I like sitting down and playing kits that are just really bad. I love it.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Because I don't like anything else to be janky. I don't get excited if I go to a venue and it sounds, you know, the room sounds like crap. Or they're like, oh, we only have terrible mics. I'm not like, sweet, I love terrible mics. I love messed up. Oh, your speakers are blown?
Oh, yeah.
Point them at me. That sounds awesome. Yeah. I don't like that for anything else other than the kit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It is a weird one though, isn't it? I when he said that, I was like, I'm just going to completely agree. I love it.
Yeah, 100%. All right, on to our next patron. This is Brandon Daghart.
Hey, Mike and Eddie. Thanks so much for taking the time to answer these questions. You guys have been so inspirational and motivational to me over the last year and a half, and I love you for what you're doing. Wrote a huge 2 or 3 paragraph long appreciation post on Patreon a couple months ago, so I'll skip all that for now. Here we go. All right, so my question. Back in the 90s, I was really into punk music, especially the LA punk scene, like the skate punk scene. Bands like NoFX, Propagandhi, Strung Out, Lagwagon, even older Blink 182. However, when I first started playing drums, I got into it the same way that a lot of people did, which is through Dave Matthews Band, Under the Table and Dreaming, and Crash. And I very rarely actually attempted to play punk music. It just seemed so crazy and fast to me and out of my wheelhouse and very intimidating. So when I was actually sitting in a kit, I was usually just focusing on my grooves, my very minimalist hi-hat funk patterns, and, you know, like the Carter Beauford Crazy Ride and China Boy Jams, things like that. But in the last year or so, I've really been wanting to get back into my roots in punk music. But as a full-time homeschool father, while the wife is out making real money, I don't really have much time to sit at a kit and practice during the day. I usually get about 1 to 2 hours on the weekend where I can actually just sit down on my kit and really go crazy and have a blast. But during the week, it's practice pads only, just when I have time to fit it in. So I've been able to really work my hand speed and chops up on a practice pad, but one thing I can't figure out is a way to practice those really fast thumping kick drum patterns of punk music. Single pedal, of course. I've never bought a double pedal, and I would like to stick with that. So my question for you is, do you have any thoughts or recommendations on exercises I could do off kit to help me with my foot speed? And just as an example, I did send you a link in the email to a song that has those really fast beats right in the beginning. If you wanted to listen to the first 15 or 20 seconds, you would hear that, you know, that really fast kick drum snare punk beat that is the staple of all punk music. And I want to be able to do that. So anyway, thanks again. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Yeah, I love you guys. That's it.
Dude, that was awesome.
Thanks, man. Wow.
I love you too, Brandon.
I'm trying to think. Have you got an answer for this one?
I think that the most, well, first of all, what he just played on his hands and knees was
great,
pretty fast.
Yeah,
yeah. That, I mean, punk doesn't go a lot faster than that.
Yeah.
You know, so the cool thing is in punk, and I think Eddie can probably speak to this better than me, but I did grow up in that world, especially the skate stuff. I mean, you know, Suicidal Tendencies, Exploited, all of the early skate punk, even, you know, pre-NoFX, I was into all that stuff. And so one thing that's great is whether it's punk of that era or gospel shout music, the tempos are about the same, and you just swap out the bass drum part in punk for the bell part and the ride part in a lot of shout music. So a lot of that, a lot of that happens in the bell in the shout, like dinka 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 dinka. So the tempos are very similar, is what I'm saying. And I think if you can hear fast, you can play fast. And if there's a physical limitation, when you think about those punk kick drum parts, you never play three notes. Sometimes you have dun dun ka dun dun. So it's two snare and two. But you never have, like, you don't have three. So as long as you have some exercises to work on that are singles and doubles, I mean, you could honestly do snare and kick as singles. So right and left. So snare, kick, left, kick, right, kick, left, kick, deku, 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 and then follow that with doubles. And speed that up, and you're kind of good to go. But yeah. I mean, what about you? How did you build your speed to play that kind of stuff?
So when you were talking then, I was trying to think back to like what I used to do in college, because I used to, that was when I was trying like actively to like get better feet. So I play heel up. So what I used to do when I'm I'm doing it now, when I practice my feet or when I'm just jamming without a pedal, I try to get the note from my heel. So my toes stay on the ground and I get the note from my heel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that
really?
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, yeah, I don't need to show you. You get it, don't you?
Yeah, I get it, but that's awesome. I've never done that.
Yeah. So I keep my toes on the ground and I get my heel out, because that kind of replicates like the feeling of, you know, playing heel up. But then also what I used to do was play heel down. So just try to get the notes out from my toes, which was really, really uncomfortable. And even doing it now, I can't really do it. But I remember in college, one of my best mates who ended up being my drum tech, he used to be able to get like these powerful heel down notes out, and really fast and really consistent when he was just sat, you know, wherever. So I used to do that to try and like, you know, get up to scratch with him. And then the next time I would sit down on my kit, because I was a heel up player, everything felt easier. So those are two things, yeah, thinking back, that I used to do. Yeah.
There you go. I think, I mean, with speed, it just comes down to whether or not it's a pattern issue or a raw speed issue. If it's raw speed, meaning that you know the pattern, you know what to do, and you can play it fine at, say, 130 BPM, you just can't play it at 160 BPM, then your brain is not getting in the way. It's your body. So you got to push, like you're physically working out and trying to get stronger and faster. If it's something where no matter what the tempo is, you always kind of mess it up every three or four bars, then it's a pattern issue. It's a brain issue, and you need to slow down and play it at whatever tempo that you can play it at 1,000 times and just wait until your brain memorizes the melody, like we talked about in yesterday's Patreon thing. You have to wait until a melody emerges and you're just singing and you're not thinking about kicks and snares. But for the most part, a lot of that stuff's just repetition and pushing yourself. You know, you could use the Groove Scribe has a feature in the metronome. If you go to the metronome at the top of the Groove Scribe, it says options. If you click on options, one of the options is auto speed up. So you click that and it opens a screen that says, okay, over the course of, you set the time, 10 minutes. Over the course of 10 minutes, I want the metronome to speed up 100 BPM. I'm going to start at 60, and over the course of 10 minutes, it's going to creep up, and you'll find the moment where you physically break. And so it's a great way to find out, okay, I'm, you know, instead of like hunting around like 170, no, 130. Too slow. And so, it, you know, it really pushes you. And a lot of times you go faster than you ever would have because you were able to ease your way into it.
Yeah, so that's sick. Amazing. Love that.
There you go. All right. Now on to my favorite accent of all time, our brother, Tom Woodlock.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Eddie. Hope you're both doing exceptionally well. Tom Woodlock here with a bit of a strange question this week, but that's just me, I guess. So how do you unlearn something that you've learned already? So what I'm talking about is one of the bands I play in. We wrote this song a couple of years back, and even at the time, and especially now, I don't like the part that I wrote for the verse. But because it's something we've played for so long and it's something that I sing over as well, that particular part has become really ingrained into my muscle memory, and I have a hard time writing anything different, thinking about anything different that might fit. And I was just wondering if you had any sort of advice whatsoever. I've done the whole thing with taking the multi-track, muting the drums, trying to program drums under it, and it all just kind of comes out sounding like the last part anyway. So I was just wondering if you've any similar experiences, any advice. Love the podcast. Keep doing the thing. And I'll see you at the UK Drum Show.
What a legend. That he's got such a good accent. And that's a great question, because sometimes I think my answer might not be what you want to hear, but I think that sometimes the difference between you liking it and it being the right thing are completely different. You know, it might just be the thing that works, mate. And sometimes as a drummer, you want to change it up a bit. You see it being a certain way, but sometimes it is just what it is. Do you know what I mean? Like that's happened to me so many times where like, I can see something and I can see it in my head, especially when I'm recording. I'm like, nah, just let me go again. And you've got the boys, the producer, and they're just saying, it's great. And you're like, yeah, but it could be this and it could be that. And I think maybe subconsciously that could be like the drummer being a little bit selfish in me, but it could be the same thing with you, mate. You know, like it could just be the thing that it's meant to be and you're just bored of it, which is maybe not the answer you were looking for. But sometimes that is just the way.
100%. I think it comes down to talking to your bandmates and just trusting in your bandmates and your brothers and just saying, look, I don't like this drum part. Just tell me, I am so more than happy to change it. If you think it needs to be changed. If you don't, let me know and I'll just trust you and I'll play it and I'll buy into it. And yeah, man, I remember having a song in a band in between my current band and in between Simon Says, where just to get the track laid down, I played Egg Shaker and Acrostic, and that was it. It was just Egg Shaker and Acrostic, and that was the part. And that was just so that the singer-songwriter could lay down the track, because we specifically didn't want to do it with a click. We were never able to get past Egg Shaker and Acrostic. It just sounded so... we couldn't find anything that sounded better. Uh-huh. And I was like, you got to be crapping me. Like, I'm not going to go out on stage and play an Egg Shaker and Acrostic in this rock band. And I was like, dude... we can't figure out anything better. And I'm like, but in the end, it was the best thing for the song.
You know, I Would, that song that your student played at camp.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The kicks are really minimalistic. Like there's not many of them, like dun-ka, dun-dun-ka, dun. Okay. It's a bit weird. And I was like, nah, it's too robotic. It sounds like it's being programmed. It doesn't feel right. And then, you know, like I didn't really fight it. I was just like, nah, yeah, fair enough. Like, it is what it is. And then as soon as I played it live, I was like, oh, I get it. But same thing, mate. Sometimes it doesn't feel right, but you know, sometimes it is just what it is, mate. Yeah.
The song takes precedence over our happiness or anything else. If it sounds good for the song, it sounds good. Bro, it's getting dark there.
I've just realized. I've just like looked at myself and I'm like, okay, it's pitch black in here. But the place has like photography lights. So when you turn them on, it's like, it's very white.
Yeah.
It's raining now. Can you hear that? It's raining a little bit now.
Not at all.
Okay, beautiful.
No, you're good.
Beautiful. Listeners,
if
you only knew the troubles that I have recording this podcast logistically, you would die of laughter. I've got three locations. All of them have their pros and they all have their cons. It's unbelievable.
If you knew how much Eddie went through to record this podcast, you would get over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie and support us, because Eddie usually goes through about 100 pounds of gas. 100 their pounds mm-hmm. of gas per week to find six different locations to be like, okay, never mind, dude, I'm packing up, I'm leaving, I've got my laptop, I'm leaving, I'm going to go to the studio. Then he calls me back and says, never mind, dude, I'm packing up, I'm headed over to Paragon. No, I'm going home.
It happened.
All
then.
Of these places are 30 minutes apart.
A couple of episodes ago, I got halfway here, it started raining and I had to turn around, mate. It's just the way it goes. But you know, we're here to deliver and we deliver well, don't we? So listeners, please support us. Jesus.
We would appreciate it. You can always find the link in the show notes, or you can just head over on to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie. To everyone that listened, thank you so much. I hope you learned a bunch. I hope you learned something about the Gretsch lineup. You know, I'm always more than happy to give Eddie equal time to chat about Tama, because I know a lot about Tama from the 90s and early 2000s, and I don't know much about modern Tama, but I'm a massive fan. So maybe we can bring Ian on the show and dig into some of the Tama lines.
I was going to say, mate.
Because I just realized you don't know anything about it either.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably know about as much as you do.
Exactly. Ian is the one for that, and he'll be over the moon to come on. So yeah, let's definitely do that, because I don't want to seem like a terrible endorsee. Do you know what I mean? But you know, whatever.
You love what you love. I remember hearing one of my favorite drummers of all time say this. I was like, why do you play for this company? He says, I love 2% of everything they make, but I love that 2% more than anything that anyone else makes.
Yeah, that's a beautiful comment, right?
And
there.
I was like,
that's a beautiful comment.
I was like, well, there you go.
And sometimes,
I was like, well, then there's nothing to talk about.
Things are unexplainable. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter to anyone, you know? It's just, I don't need to know the specifics. It makes me feel good. Do you know what I mean? There we go.
What are you playing? A Silver Star? Star Classic? Yeah. Starphonic? You don't know.
I don't know.
It's a star.
It just says TAMA. You
get some Starlink?
All I see is TAMA. Do you know what I mean? TAMA.
You see Lars and his mullet flowing freely and you're happy to go. All right, everybody. Have an amazing week. Get in some practice. We will be doing our next Zoom hang probably in about 2 weeks. So if you want to be a part of that, join us through our Patreon page. That's where we post the Zoom link and then we all hang out. And we are starting to make you guys part of those streams. We had Zolt on the last one teach a lesson.
It was amazing.
So one of the patrons taught a lesson, which was incredible. Then we called out some people to try things out. So it's getting very interactive and we're starting to really create a pretty beautiful family. So we'd love for you to be a part of that. But for now, episode 59 is in the can. I don't know it. We're gonna replace it anyways. I'm gonna put in a little. I'm gonna put in my clinic track underneath you singing that.
All right, sweet. See in a bit.
All right, good job. You won't see me in a bit. You can't even see yourself.
I know. It is literally pitch black now. All right, I've got to shoot.